And from the border of liberty and prosperity and the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Wednesday, March 13th, not March 11th. I better turn that around. Get rid of that. We're going to confuse people. Helps when you don't have stuff in the back. How's everybody doing out there tonight? What a busy, busy week it's been. Last night I wanted to be on the air, but we had a blackout. A car made contact with a telephone pole, and it caused a transformer explosion, a fire. All this excitement, you know, I get a phone call on the way home from one of my projects, and Jessica's yelling, hey, you know, I heard a big bang, the house shook, blah, 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 you know. I said, well, it was probably a transformer, hon, if the power is out. She said, oh, what's that? So I had explained to her what a transformer was. But anyway, pretty exciting day. I am enjoying the spring-like weather. So we have less than 10 days away from spring, the spring, right? The vernal equinox. And we have less than a month away of the solar eclipse on April 8th. So we, my family and I are planning on going to see that here. It's not too far away, but very exciting. Anyway, all different kinds of stuff. I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. We're going to be dealing with some I told you so stuff. So let's talk about this whole TikTok thing. The main issue with all of this stuff is that if you're going to do business in China, if you're a Chinese-based business, like the parent company of TikTok, I forget what that is, you need to be, the Chinese Communist Party has to have access to your business. So in effect, they can call it communism, you could call it fascism, whatever you want. It's the government is in charge of the company, basically. So you have to do as they say. And this is what part of the thing is. Now, I recently had a little bit of identity theft here with a credit card. And I mean, I'm managing that every day here with things where people, you know, they do all different weird things. How they got it, I have no idea. I physically have the card, but they got the number. Now, the other thing is this. So we know that Chinese Communist Party, not always the best actor out there. There are adversaries. I mean, if you listen to the conspiracy theory world, it's a whole bunch of conspiracy theories. If you listen to the mainstream news, there's not a whole bunch of conspiracy theory there. With the military buildup stuff in Taiwan, balloons over the United States, you name it. No, there are adversaries. So what happens is the government, right? Their adversaries. How are they influencing elections, the social society type things? How are they handling influencing our children, who are the main purveyors on TikTok and consumers? And remember, when they don't charge you something, you are the product, is what it is. Now, years ago, we were just worried about data mining and things of that nature. Now we're getting into, are these platforms influencing elections? Are they influencing people? As I've always pointed out, when I was in politics, one of the things I said was, just because you see it on the news or you see a commercial doesn't mean that you have to vote for it. Doesn't mean you have to believe in it or anything else. So, it's just the way it is. With things. I'm going to go and take a break, over break. There was a story I forgot to bring up here on with Robert F. Kennedy here, Jr., that goes into this stuff. And let's see if I can get that up here during one of the commercials. Okay. Hold on. But anyway, yeah, I'll do that on the commercial. Some other stuff here. From San Diego, San Diego County approving more homeless housing options. San Diego County Board of Supervisors is approving sleeping cabins and overnight parking for the homeless. A teenager who lost her fingers in a jet ski mishap is now suing San Diego's Mission Bay Aquatic Center. Kira Doshi tells NBC7 she's not letting this challenge define her, but she wants to make sure it doesn't happen to anybody else. In July 2022, Doshi was a counselor in training at MBAC's water sports camp. As she sat on the back of the jet ski, holding the flag in one hand and tow rope in the other, she was flung off the back and her fingers severed in the rope. Let me comment on this. I don't know how she was holding the rope, but it's very common, very natural for people to wrap the rope around their hands or around their fingers. And I've been on more than one project where someone has done that and has damaged their fingers, never had an avulsion or an amputation, but I've seen very severe injuries to the hands. That might have been what happened here. I don't know on that, but that's common. That's what I'm seeing out there. She spent 15 days in the ICU. They saved one finger and she has two prosthetic ones. Doshi is suing the Mission Bay Aquatic Center for negligence. In a statement to NBC7, MBAC says it's held a record of safety and education for 50 years, saying it's aware of the accident in 2022, but cannot comment. Doshi says that she hopes MBAC offers training in the future. Now, let me point out to you, here, and we'll be, as we get closer to the summer, we're going to be talking about teenage safety issues. Getting your first job, you're all excited, you're out there doing things, and a lot of times teenagers don't get the training because it's a summer job, but your employer is responsible for training everybody out there, and what the job is, what the safety hazards are or aren't, and everything else. Now, if you're a company that wants to invest a little bit in your teen workers, give us a call, 845-269-5772. We'll line up some training for you. This is from Wall Township down in Wall Township, I believe is a New Jersey speak, exit 67 on the Parkway. Mystery surrounding the discovery of human remains in Monmouth County is developing. A neighbor on Narumusan Road in Wald Township says prosecutors are investigating after multiple sets of bones were found. So over in, Rust Armorer has sentencing date after being found guilty of manslaughter. The farmer on the set of Rust has her sentencing date for the fatal onset shooting. Lisa Moore has more. As everyone knows, we've been covering this story from the beginning. This one out of San Francisco. Protesters have taken over a chunk of the San Francisco International Airport, demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. A group called Critical Resistance arrived at the SFO this morning, San Francisco International Airport, that is. They are holding a banner that reads, "Stop the World for Gaza." Over 300 protesters are outside and inside the airport. Some are in front of the TSA security line at the international terminal, and others are blocking a gate. Some are marching in a circle on the road outside the airport. Protesters want the U.S. to stop sending aid to Israel and for Israel to cease what they say is an assault on Gaza. Here we have New York donut giant is moving. A donut giant is ready to move out due to crime, Lisa G reports. Again, here is some more protests. Miami Beach commissioners give unanimous approval to a resolution directing the administration to regulate and control future protests to the fullest extent permitted by law. This comes after two pro-Palestine demonstrations outside the Miami Beach Convention Center and another at Temple Emmanuel. The police chief denied Mayor Stephen Miner's claims that saying 22 officers were outside and inside the synagogue during the protests. He apologized to the mayor and each commissioner for not alerting them to the demonstration. One resident got into a verbal dispute with the mayor over a proposed resolution. Another resident argues the resolution is illegal. Mayor Stephen Miner says Miami Beach does respect and protect free speech. Police Chief Wayne Jones fired back at Commissioner David Suarez, who was angry about protesters outside and inside Temple Emmanuel. And we're going to go on to a little bit of political news here. We've reached out to the Kennedy campaign. We're going to do that again. I'm going to try to get someone from the campaign on here with this. And he's been getting a lot of... I'm not endorsing a candidate, but he has a lot of very interesting things to say here. And I wanted to share with a brief thing from him today that came out. So let's.
And I'll leave you with three thoughts. One is that any power that government takes from the people, it will never return voluntarily. Number two rule. Every power that government takes, it will ultimately abuse to the maximum extent possible. And number three, nobody ever complied their way out of totalitarianism. The only thing we can do is resist.
Now, there's a lot of talk on this campaign. That was his thing here, right? I'm reading a story off of NPR.org. And this is heard on All Things Considered today. Ashley Lopez is the author here. And what I'm going to say here is I've been talking about, and at least on two other programs, one in September, one a lot earlier than that, on ballot access. And I have mentioned it periodically. It's extremely important that you understand ballot access here. After I mentioned ballot access, and I did a one-hour show on it. We had another radio show of someone who I've dealt with a little bit over the years, who's out of WABC New York. Like 3 days later, he did a show on ballot access. So I was like, well, that was almost the same as mine. So I sort of like think, maybe some real bigwigs out there are listening there. And if you are, give me a call. You know, 845-269-5772. Maybe we could, you know, have something going on here, Mr. Bigwig. With many Americans unhappy at the prospect of a rematch between President Biden and former President Donald Trump, voters may be more open than usual to a third party and independent candidate. Robert F. Kennedy is among the candidates hoping to appeal to voters, looking for alternatives. In fact, now, the question is this. I've been involved in some independent campaigns over the years, all right? And after Ross Perot in 1992, the Republicans and the Democrats, in a huge bipartisan effort, squeezed a lot of people out of, they didn't want this to happen again, so they squeezed a lot of candidates out of the president, federal elections, the presidential elections, even local elections, by making it extremely difficult to get on the ballot. Now, if you are first time you're hearing this, how do you get on the ballot? You get on the ballot by obeying the state law that you're in or the territory. Now, territories also, they don't have electoral college votes, but they, which is the way we run things in the United States. But they do have more like a voice of the people, like a resolution type thing. And what needs to happen is you have to get on the ballot. How do you do that? Every state has a different way of doing it. In New Jersey, where I'm familiar, you need 1,000 signatures to get on the ballot as an independent. If you're going to be a Democrat or Republican, then you're going to need to 1,000 signatures from your from members of your prospective party to get onto the ballot, so you can be on the June primary, first Tuesday in June. Now, the problem in states like New Jersey is that, and you might have heard this week, No, President Biden and former President Trump both have the enough delegate votes for their convention to get to be the nominee for the party and the first vote. All right, if they're able to if the delegates vote the way that the state that they're from has, right, to get them to be the nominee. If no candidate has a majority of votes, then the magic number of votes is a supermajority. Then it goes through, it could be anybody in the party could be nominated for president, and then it gets voted on. I believe that's the way that works. But anyway, RFK Jr. has got to get on the ballot. Now, there is, the thing is, he needs to get, for him to win, and this is according to Amaryllis Kennedy, she's one of his campaign people, he cannot win unless he's on the ballot. But getting on the ballot, he's going to need to collect over 1 million signatures, and despite of that support, in order to be on the ballot. So it's a large part of the focus. So they got to go out. Normally they hire campaign consultants. They go out there and they hire students, usually poli sci students, to go out and collect signatures. And what ends up happening is that all of these signatures are very heavily scrutinized because they have to be from registered voters. How many people do not know whether or not they're registered voters? You'd be surprised. That's all I have to say. A boatload, all right? How many people hand in fraudulent signatures? Guess what? A lot of people. There's one guy in New Jersey him and his girlfriend, I don't believe it was his wife, handed in boatloads of fraudulent signatures. I happen to know him from politics. He was out of Middlesex County, and he did not support my campaign, and we'll leave it at that. He ended up going and, all different legal things, where they had fake signatures, they had this, people who were dead. It was even one of the counties in the year 2000 election, they actually went out informally and went to cemeteries to see if the people at the cemetery were registered to vote. And yeah, everybody at the cemetery in one case was registered to vote. But he was told, the person who was doing this was told to drop it, allegedly, because he would have gotten, he would have had a problem, and we'll leave it at that, all right, for investigating or even mentioning this. So this is all gets checked out, fraudulent stuff. And I know it's not popular for us to say, well, no, Jim, you can't say that there's fraudulent stuff going on out there. Oh, yeah, I can, because I have firsthand knowledge of this stuff. All right, from way back in the day when I was there involved. Was it enough to change an election? Yeah, the 1993 election for governor in the state of New Jersey, it's been theorized that there were some fraudulent record keeping there that pushed certain candidates over the board, over their mark. They performed better than expected. So anyway, that's what's going on out there with this. He needs over 1 million signatures. Now, the question is this. Okay, he has no chance of getting on the ballot. Some people are, why is he even running? Why is he running? I played this already. I'm going to play it again.
And I'll leave you with three thoughts. One is that any power that government takes from the people, it will never return voluntarily. Number two rule, every power that government takes, it will ultimately abuse to the maximum extent possible. And number three, nobody ever complied their way out of totalitarianism. The only thing we can do is resist.
Now, that was from a speech from Hillsdale College. That is one of the few colleges, the only college that I know of, that doesn't accept federal funding, so they're able to do a whole bunch of stuff differently here. No, they're able to have stuff like this. But anyway, do you think that a Republican or Democratic nominee would say what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said just now? The answer is probably not. So the main reason, my opinion, Jimmy Polzel here, right? You can mark it Wednesday, March 13th, 8:28 p.m. Eastern time, right? These candidates that are third party are the ones who are going to say that. That's why they're in the race, because nobody wants to hear from anybody, nothing, unless you are a candidate. You could go out there and like some of the groups out here in New Jersey, stand in front of one of them is LaRouche PAC, the Lyndon LaRouche folks, stand in front of a post office, and you could go out there and say, we're doing next one. So we're doing public information campaign. We're doing this, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you are? Are you on the ballot? No. Thank you. Have a nice day. If you go out there and say, hi, I'm Jimmy Polzel. I'm running for assembly. Guess what? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, are you on the ballot? Can we vote for you? Yes. Well, now we want to hear what you have to say. Undoubtedly, that's what always happens out there. That is why the candidates go out there. You want to have big meetings, big movements out there. You want to get your face out there. You want to be a legitimate candidate. That's why a lot of these legitimate candidates, these third-party candidates go out there, and they do this to get the message out. Now, let me go to a commercial break here, and I'm going to come back because I got to finish that thought here. Let me gather my thoughts. Yes, Jessica, I am your father. Now, let me finish this thought here, and then we're going to move on to some other stuff here. All right, because this is going to be a segue into our next topic here. So, we've all read about the Scopes monkey trial, so to speak, way back in the next year it's going to be like 100 years with this. I'm sure in Flemington, New Jersey, they will have, no, not Flemington, in Tennessee, they're going to have a big thing here, right? When, what's the Scopes monkey trial? John T. Scopes, who was a high school science teacher, was accused of violating Tennessee's Butler Act, which made it illegal for teachers to teach human evolution at any state-funded school. All right. The trial was deliberately staged in order to attract publicity to a small town of Dayton, Tennessee, where it was held. Now, the prosecuting attorney for this, all right, was a man by the name of Williams Jennings Bryan. He was a three-time presidential candidate and former Secretary of State, and argued for prosecution and going on and on. And you could go in, and as I recall, there is a play or something along those lines that I read in high school on this. And you can go out there and check it out. Now, why do I bring up William Jennings Bryan? He ran for president three times, lost three times. All right. Now, someone said to him, now, he was called the Great Commoner, the Boy Orator, all right, and everything else. Now, people kept on saying, why do you keep running if you keep losing? And you know what his answer was? You're going to love this one. He said, because the more I run, the more my policies get in and get implemented. And that's what the idea was. The more he talked, the more he got in front of people, the more his ideas were out there. Just get his ideas out there. If you realize something in the Tea Party movement in the United States, Taxed Enough Already is what the name of it, in 2009, and full disclosure, I was involved in that movement, and I had the video to prove it, all right? With that whole thing, again, if you did not have that, we would not have had a lot of the things that got in the last 11 years. Unfortunately, what happened was the big business got involved in the Tea Party and discombobulated. And rather than being from the grassroots up, then all of a sudden it became top down and it got co-opted and everything else. And we have the mess that we have today. contributed to the mess that we had today, because every action had an equal and opposite reaction. That's what the reality is here. I'm not doing politics anymore. But now you're going to say, well, how is all of this a segue into your next discussion? Here we have, you're going to like this one. New Jersey had a plan to fight a pandemic, but state leaders didn't know existed when COVID hit. And this is from NJ.com, updated yesterday, published yesterday, article by Karen Price Mueller. I think I know her. Hold on. Let me see her picture. Blah, 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 blah. All right, and this is like the fourth anniversary of the pandemic. All right, I believe I might know her. But anyway, so here's the beginning of the article. They had a strategy. Years before people in New Jersey started dying from COVID-19, the State Department of Health had a plan in place on how to respond to the next big pandemic. And we're going to do a deep dive into this report, not today, because it's 900 pages, all right? But according to a new report on how the state handled the outbreak released on Monday, it did not appear that anyone was aware of the 2015 PAIR plan even existed. Well, guess what? I know for a fact that it existed, because during the Ebola scare in the mid-2000s, Jimmy Poulsel, I was involved, and my family was involved in the preparation. And that's all I'm allowed to say on that, all right, with this, because basically we all had to sign NDAs, but all that we're allowed to say is, yes, there was a plan in place. Now, blah, blah, blah. Going through here, senior leadership was not aware of that plan. Now, I'm going to do a quick Google search, right, on somebody here. Because this actually is relevant to my political campaign in 2009 for assembly. Now, everybody here on the program knows, and if you don't know, we got a lot of new listeners out there, that I was one of the people involved with the anthrax attack cleanups for NBC and CBS. I was the assistant to the senior science advisor, and I was involved in the cleanups. That's really all I'm allowed to say on that. However, one thing was obvious that with this, and I had said that the Centers for Disease Control and the country is not prepared for this. All right. I was part of my campaign. I made so many speeches and everything with this, all right, that it was impossible. I was running as an independent. That it's impossible that my opponents in the Democrat and Republican Party did this. They said, well, look, people are tired of hearing this disaster. People are tired of hearing this bullshit, blah, 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 blah. That's what I was told. Now, one of the people who I ran against was a man named, and I'm going to disclose, I like this guy personally. He's really a really good guy. However, it was the current Speaker of the House for the state of New Jersey, who was in office since January 9th, 2018, as Speaker of the House. So in 2009, now he might have won in one ear and out the other, 2009, he knew about this. Why? It was part of my campaign. So for any of these people in power to say that they didn't know, or they weren't told, maybe they didn't know, but they weren't told that it wasn't out there, guess what? It's a lie out there. They knew that we were unprepared because I told them that they were unprepared. So what I would suggest, part of the reason why we have safety wars is that we could get this message out here. We are still unprepared for this stuff. Now you're going to say, well, Jimmy, you're full of it. All right. So here we have, right, from this plan that was put out in the state of New Jersey from Paul Zubeck, a former assistant to the state attorney general who led The years-long $9 million report of the state's COVID response through the law firm, Boston Consulting, and Montgomery McCracker walking in on roads. All right, all this stuff here. The projected and they're talking about the plans, and they anticipated some of the things that happened. Zubek remarked, although downplaying its impact somewhat, blaming the lack of information about the pandemic and how it spread as a bigger problem. Having a viable plan of action on a shelf gathering dust, though, was just one of the issues highlighted in a 910-page report that had been commissioned by Governor Phil Murphy. He did the right thing by having an incident review. Post-incident review, you got to give it to that him on that. The report said that there were meaningful gaps in New Jersey's level of planning and preparations that could have been avoided. The state also had to start from scratch in creating the needed authorizations for the emergency response, which included 200 executive orders and 100 waivers to suspend regulations of all different sorts. That cost precious time. In addition, the report called for the state to create plans for a wide set of emergencies that match the level of detail recommended in 2015 pandemic flu plan and then practice them. New Jersey should start by updating plans for cyber emergencies and bioterrorism incidents. Didn't we have some cell phone outages lately? Yeah, I think we recall that. And some other cyber emergencies in the last month and a half? Yeah, like Facebook being down for 5 hours? Now you say, well, what's the big deal? It's social media. Guess what? A lot of people get all their info off of social media. Well, we had the blackout last night. Guess what? Everybody went on social media who could get a signal, find out what the hell is going on. Right? The way it is. Why? Because that's the way the police department communicates. And everything. And the power companies is through social media, right? You're not right with that because you can access that from anywhere. They could go, hey, their server here in New Jersey is down, or New York is down. Hey, they could call up their buddy out in, Nebraska and say, log on to our Facebook account and put on there, blah, 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 blah. And guess what? In 10 minutes, it's all over the world, right? So, with it going on and on and on, according to the report, the Ebola scare in particular prompted the State Department of Health to take additional steps to prepare for a public health emergency. And in September 2015, the Division of Public Health Infrastructure, Laboratories, and Emergency Preparedness published the Pandemic Influenza Plan referenced by Zubek. I know about that plan on that because we were discussing about that plan in 2015 with a client and the state of New Jersey. So what's my point on this? We have 1.3 million people coming up to, maybe probably more, dead in this country, millions more sickened by COVID, and they still don't have their guvno together, these people. Really? So what's in it? What is it? Every September, since the incarnation of this program, we talked about disaster preparedness. So it's incumbent on you because it's not, this is it. This is not conspiracy theory. This is not conspiracy theory. This is right in the news. NJ.com, a Gannett paper, right? Probably in the Star Ledger, the state paper here, what's known as the state paper. This is it. This is what reality is. What are you going to do to prepare your family, your community, your workplace, and everybody else to go out there and prepare for this stuff? Because I tell you what, they ain't prepared. We have all these social problems here. Everyone's dropping the ball. We have financial issues. Or you have one side, oh, everything is great, no problem, blah, 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 blah. And on the other hand, you got, the other set of people, things are going to get bad. We're headed for a recession. We've been hearing this for time immemorial. Doesn't seem like anybody's making any bold moves out here. Well, we got to worry, the politicians, oh, we got to worry about stuff. We need to be worried about either 2 years when I'm up for election, 4 years when I'm up for election, or 6 years when I'm up for election. That's what we're working towards, our next thing. Rather than seeing, hey, what are we gonna do? fixing the problem. We got to talk about what we are going to do to help your families, to prepare for your community, because it's obvious they don't have it again. So what do we have? Yeah, we could joke about it and say you need paper plates, paper towels, and of course, toilet paper, because they ran out. Okay, those are all realistic things. What are you doing to get yourself financially solvent enough that you can weather another pandemic? You don't like that talk? Oh, did I make you uncomfortable? Okay, well, how's this one for another one? All right. We have, and we mentioned this a long time, right? For a very long time, the prospect of nuclear war and nuclear terrorism. We have President Putin in Russia threatening it here, threatening all of this stuff. Really? Because that's part of their plan is to use nuclear weapons if they're going to go start having issues out here, right? If they're going to lose the war, that's part of it. We have space-based weapons, lasers. This week it came out with China with space-based lasers. Not Jimmy Pozel saying this, this is in the mainstream press. Gravity bombs. Nuclear, right? The F-35, we covered it last week, being now certified to carry nuclear weapons as of middle of October last year. All this stuff going on. It's like mayhem and chaos out there. And we have, what are we talking about in this country? All this baloney out there. When we need to take on the serious issue. And if we're not, the government is not going to take on the serious issue. You need to do that in with yourself and your community, taking on serious issues, doing what is legal. I'm not talking breaking the law. Well, when you break the law, game over. I don't really have too much sympathy for you. You got to obey the law with this stuff and go out and do the right thing. All right. Yes, that's a Jim Pozel rant. You know, it's the fourth anniversary of the COVID-19 pandemic, right? 4 years ago today, this is an article from David Leonard from New York Times. Everything started to shut down 4 years ago with that. I remember, okay, Wednesday afternoon, they made the announcement. Oh, crap, Thursday, we knew that we'd be holed up with the kids and my father-in-law. What do you think we did on Wednesday? It was date, we went out to lunch on a date because we knew we'd be doing that. Then we had 2 days of preparing. I was out there, but they already started shutting down because we're one of the ground zeros here. They already started shutting this place down. I was down there getting food. I'm over there putting on a face, on a full face respirator, going through Stop and Shop. I got the pictures to prove it. All this mayhem. You go to a BJ's, and there was about the local BJ's here never has more than 30 or 40 people online, right? There's like 300 people online, you know, all winding through the, like a serpentine belt going through the whole thing. But, you know, again, what are you going to do with that? Last time we had the blackout. What are we going to do? We have a blackout. Hey, we got everything mitigated here. We got everything we need. So, talking more about finances here, right? Let's talk about gold. Gold is at an all-time high, 2187. Silver, 2527. Platinum, 958 an ounce. Palladium, 350. What about the stock market? 39,000 on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, right? S&P 500, 5165. When I used to cover this stuff, right? NASDAQ at 2071. And let's see, do we have Bitcoin here? Bitcoin at 70, almost 73,000 as of right now. We don't mention this. The price of all these commodities has gone up, basically, except for platinum and silver. But a lot of these commodities are going up. So this is what I want everyone to do. Go and prepare. We're going to go and take another break, and we're going to talk about our usual OSHA news, go back to the normal thing, and we'll go from there. And we are back. Let's get our side-by-side view here. All right. And, okay, here we have, and again, everyone is innocent until proven guilty, and a lot of this stuff gets litigated and vacated and negotiated out. A Long Island construction contractor agrees to pay $144,000 enhanced compliance following U.S. Department of Labor's investigation and litigation. Let me see. Hold on. Let me see how much time I have left here. Okay. We should be able to get that. On June 5th, 2019, OSHA cited a Northridge company for willful in New York for willful and serious fall protection struck by electrical violations following a December 2018 death of an employee. The employee fell 12 feet while walking on the roof panels of a partially completed East Pontchartrain structure. The company contested OSHA's citations, the Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission. The department and the company have reached a settlement that upholds the department's citations and requires the company to pay $144,000 in penalties for its violations. The stipulated settlement agreement also includes enhanced abatement requirements that require all construction companies that the owner owns, manages, or field supervisors, or for which he serves as an officer. So basically, you hire this guy. Guess what? All of this crap comes along with him, right? With him. So they basically, really impacted this guy's life, right? The enhancements require all such companies to perform a JHA prior to starting work and use a daily safety inspection checklist for all jobs. Ensure all four persons have received OSHA 30-hour safety training. Outreach training. I hope it ain't from that company that handed out 20,000 fraudulent certificates. We'll be covering that probably tomorrow. And all field employees have received OSHA 10-hour safety training. Impose safety planning training and inspection mandates on their subcontractors. This settlement affirms OSHA's citations. And here is the stipulated agreement. Again, all part of the public record here, folks. So I'm not doing anything. So let's see. This is how this is set up. Based on the following recital, the complainant and respondent herein agree to the following. What? $144,000 fine. Respondent affirmatively states that all citation items have been abated and will comply in the future with OSHA. The Occupational Safety and Health Act. Respondent agrees to implement the following additional abatement measures for any construction company where Tim Kane, the guy, is an owner, officer, manager, or field supervisor, including but not limited to a whole list of companies. All right, the company will consent to entry by OSHA for any jobs to be performed directly by employees of the company. All right, going on and on and on. Now, let's see, I should have been able to call up the original thing here. Okay, I don't have it. My dealings with OSHA, you're better off negotiating than taking it to the Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission. I suspect that this was appealed, this whole thing, as because of there might have been ongoing litigation with this, and they wanted to delay this as long as possible. That may be it. But I've had clients told by OSHA very politely and professionally, look, if you're going to fight this, you're going to lose with this. And especially here where there's a fatality, no, not a very good probability for an outcome. This is from the U.S. Department of Labor will offer training compliance assistance at a 2024 Central Alabama Construction Safety Conference and Expo. It is tomorrow. Sorry for the short notice, but we just got this today from OSHA. It's going to be at the Hyundai Training Center in Montgomery. I know where that is. Employers can, basically at the one-day event, OSHA representatives and other presenters will offer free training and compliance assistance to the English and Spanish employers and employees from preventing construction-related injuries and illnesses. And they're going to have stuff in Spanish there, and, you know, it's an expo. So that's what I have here. Let's see if there's anything else here. I got to do a stop share here. I don't want to have a copyright ding violation. Okay. So apparently Adobe has had an issue here with their AI called Firefly. Firefly, Adobe's AI image tool, repeats some of the same controversial mistakes that Google's Gemini made in inaccurate racial and ethnic depictions. We mentioned that earlier in the week. Google shut down its Gemini image creation tool last month after critics pointed out that it was creating historically inaccurate images depicting America's founding fathers as Black, for instance, and this is reported from semaphore.com, and refusing to depict white people. CEO Sundar Pichai told employees the company got it wrong. So, again, I don't know. They got it wrong with this. This is the danger. I mentioned the thing with Martin Luther, the reformer from the 16th century, how they got his. Yeah, he was the right race, but everything else in the photo was pretty much wrong. However, it was an actual very pretty photo here. So we're going to wrap this up, it looks like. And hold on. Yeah, we're going to wrap this up. We're going to go and with our outro video. And let me come here and share this. And in the meantime, we're going to have a commercial break. Yes, you are the solution to unsafe workplaces. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the rant. And hopefully there'll be a lot more rants in your future from Jim Polzel. See you tomorrow, or if not tomorrow, later in the week, possibly Friday.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.